Welcome to the She Wore Black podcast. I'm Agatha Andrews. Today, I have V. Castro on the show for a fourth time. We talk about her gorgeous book, The Haunting of Alejandra, The Trials of Motherhood, Generational Trauma, and Depeche Mode. You'll see why. I do want to offer a trigger warning for discussion of postpartum depression and intrusive thoughts, but it's an important and thoughtful conversation in a topic that is very personal to V. Castro. You can find her books in my online bookshop, where every purchase you make helps both the podcast as well as independent bookstores nationwide. That's at bookshop.org/shop/sheworeblack. You can also help out the show by following me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and leaving me a review wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining me today. Now, on to the show. V. Castro. This is your fourth time back. No one else has been on the show four times, ma'am.
I know. Thank you. We have such a good time.
We do. I'm so happy to have you back. This book beautiful. The Haunting of Alejandra is beautiful. I remember when you and me and LP Hernandez were sitting at a restaurant in San Antonio eating good Mexican food, man. And you were telling us about this story. And I couldn't wait since then. And you were crying when you were telling us. And I think I was crying too. And LP was probably crying. And but it's a good thing because it's important. It's an important conversation that we need to have. So if you don't mind telling our listeners that maybe don't already know, can you tell us about The Haunting of Alejandra?
Yeah. I mean, this story is about motherhood. Or parenthood, you know, because it's not easy. And it's about mental health, what you put in to being a parent on top of the stuff, the emotional, mental baggage you've inherited yourself from childhood, what your parents have inherited. So it definitely covers generational trauma, generational curses, history, but also the pressure of being a great mother and a good mother and a wife and all of these expectations that I felt culturally. But also, you know, I'm a horror writer and I wanted to also delve into the story of La Llorona, because what would drive someone to want to kill their children and themselves? To end their lives and to do something so drastic that they're so hurt that they don't want to live another day. And, you know, I understand the hardship of postnatal depression. And that's, you know, I wrote this book after, you know, the birth of my daughter, my third child. And I just kind of poured it all out. And, you know, you see a crumbling relationship. There's a lot there. And so, yes, it's scary. And but it also shows you the power of love, the true power of love, self-love.
As I told V before we started recording, I am questioning the decision of wearing eye makeup through this recording. So I might weep the whole time, but we shall move forward. I'm just getting my audience ready. So you start the book with her in the shower, which, you know, she's just trying to get a moment of peace. And I'm not sure there's a mother alive who doesn't viscerally know this moment, even without postpartum depression. Postpartum depression is also a chemical thing that happens in our mind, but you don't even have to suffer from that to know this moment. And what's so powerful is how much it speaks to the maternal experience, this moment you start us with in the book. So you set the reader up so well for everything that follows. We identify with her intrusive thoughts immediately because you started with this moment. And you know, I don't know if you ever remember, I made the post yesterday because it's something I thought about, but that Mombi meme that was floating
around. Yes, I saw that. So true.
Right?
Survival mode.
Yeah, exactly.
Going through the motions. Mm-hmm. Going through the motions.
And so what, for those who don't know what I'm talking about, it's a meme of a mother's face and it says Mombi instead of zombie on top. And it's about like how women are moms staying up no matter how exhausted they are. Like after their children have gone to bed, even though they want to go to bed too, they stay up just because it's their moment to be mm-hmm. by themselves. And you know, I think it was meant to be funny, but I think ultimately women just responded to that, like feeling like, oh, I'm not the only one who does that.
Yeah.
You know? And so I thought about that when I was reading this opening moment of her in the shower, because it's also universal. Like, let me just be in this hot water for one more minute, you know?
And the door is locked.
Yeah.
Because most bathrooms have locks on them. Whereas in a home, you know, the kitchen doesn't, the, you know, living room, bedrooms, and sometimes even the bathroom isn't off limits. You know, when you're a mother to a small child or a baby, you've got to keep the door open, and you just, that's how it is. I remember showering with my baby, you know, when I was alone, where I had to put her in the bouncer.
Yeah.
And take her up with me.
Yep. And so you don't even get that shower time.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that set the reader up so well, because it was so relatable.
Yeah. And I really put my heart and soul into it, because after The Queen of Cicadas, which was really hard to get published, and then it got, you know, Stoker nom, I was really hoping The Haunting of Alejandra would really do it and go far and be picked up, because, you know, this is my lifeblood. This is who I am. And it's not an easy road publishing.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy road to publishing when you're a woman of color and you're writing stories with leads that aren't the norm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you do something else in this book that's really, really important. And which is to show the role that everyone else can play in these intrusive thoughts that we have.
Yeah.
Because in Alejandra's case, you know, it's the role of the husband. It's the role of the other mothers of the kids at school. It's the role of strangers and how they respond to her out in public. And I think it's important because even when you, for example, have like an incredible partner, there are still so many elements of society that make life harder than it has to be. Whether yeah. it's battling a medical insurance company, whether it's weird things happening at school, their parents can be really difficult and really weird to children who aren't theirs, you know. And I'm sorry, but if a child is 3 or 4 years old, I am going to be standing there to make sure that another parent isn't a weirdo to my child.
You know? Yeah.
So like, there are just so many times when the grace of someone has saved me from the brink. You know, my child having a tantrum at 3 years old in a Target, and I'm on the verge of tears at checkout, and a woman just came and took my cart, walked me to my car and loaded my things into the car. And I just wept because of her kindness, you know. And it's like, that would have been a very different kind of weeping without that kindness. And it's just like, guys, it's not that hard to live in this world with other people, but we make it so hard on each other. And it makes us have these intrusive thoughts
it hardens us, you know. It does harden us. And it's, you know, I wrote this quite quickly because I just had so much to say. And then there was also lockdown.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, well, didn't go anywhere anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I hope that in all my books, you know, in Goddess of Filth, in the beginning, it's like, you are not alone. I always have something in the beginning and of my books to kind of give people a little boost to let them know that they're not alone. Because writing is a solitary thing, but also reading a book, you know, and sometimes a book can make you think twice about those intrusive thoughts, to counter them, to immerse you into another emotion, to let you see another side of a story. And that's what I want. I want women to know that there is hope, or parents to know there's hope if you're in a really dark place. And it's okay to ask for help, because that's the hardest thing, asking for help sometimes. So I know growing up, you know, culturally, you kind of as a you just take it on. You take it all on. You know, you're everything to everyone, and you put yourself last and you ask for very little. And that makes you good. That makes you exceptional. That's what the standard is. Doing a lot and asking very, very, very little in return or nothing. Even if you're struggling, even if you're hurting.
Yeah. There's
I wanted to address that.
Yes, absolutely. And there's moments to the like you talked about the other mothers and the character like Alejandra noticed or feels isolated from the other mothers. And you know, it really does take a village or just kindness sometimes, you know, and how you know, my best friend. You know, we're both Latinas from South Texas that grew up, you know, and we're here in the Austin area now. And she's like, I'm going to make it a point to smile at older women, like, you know, especially Latina older women, because they're so often invisible. And that's a whole other entire other conversation about Latino and
Absolutely.
Latino invisibility is real. And I think you even posted like data and statistics about how often we're not platformed or, you know,
Absolutely.
these kinds of things.
Absolutely.
She's like, I'm gonna really, even if it's just a smile, I just want to make them feel seen for a sec, like other, because we're all, you know, we're almost 50 even. And you know, and it's amazing like how something so small can just make a difference in somebody's life. And it's not about toxic positivity. It literally is recognition of another human being, and that's all it
And
is.
a sense of community. It's a sense
Yes.
of community. And I think, you know, we've lost a lot of that, especially post-COVID. You
Yeah.
know, we've and it's nice to get that back. But that's why I think literature is great. Books are wonderful. Librarians are important.
Yeah.
And it pisses me off about book bans because, you know, these that's information, that's community, that's a different perspective, a different voice. We're not meant to all fall into line with one way of thinking.
That's what
Oh
that makes that scares people though, you know.
yeah, of course, of course. And you know, when you're a perceived threat, people want to silence that threat, or they want to, yeah, discourage other voices
Yeah.
from speaking out. And I think it's important we talk about it. We talk about mental health, even if it isn't pretty.
Yeah. Well, this is certainly a book. I had to read it in chunks, like 50 pages at a time. I couldn't just sit and plow through the whole thing. Not only was it, you know, like it's a heavy topic, but I wanted to be thoughtful about my reading with this book because it had so many wonderful things to say. You know, even though the
Thank
conversations
you.
are hard, it was so engaging. I probably could have sat there and read it because it was a very engaging, thrilling, even because of the paranormal, you know, it's still a horror story. Like, make it horror. But I wanted to be thoughtful about what I was ingesting as a reader from this
Yeah.
book. One of the things that I think is important to talk about is that you are reclaiming the story of La Llorona here. And I know it's an old folk tale from our culture, but the historical elements that you wrote about, I loved those historical chapters, because it's part of the conversation of generational trauma. And I wanted you to speak to this. I know you also read Isabel Cañas, I think, and her story that's coming out around this, like a little bit later than yours, does a lot of the same kind of work as far as addressing like historical generational things using vampires, you know, but you're using
Yeah.
and it's our history, and you're using these like supernatural elements to kind of talk about something that very much happened. And I wanted to see if you could speak to that a little bit and making those choices and how you did it effectively as a writer, because this the craft that you used, I mean, girl, this is
Yeah, thank you. No,
good.
so basically, so look, again, like we say about Latino invisibility, you know, that they say that there's nothing new under the sun. And yeah, there probably isn't. But the fact is, our stories have not been told really or told by us. So, you know, I love delving into these folk tales because it's something fresh, it's something new. It also kind of reaches out to, the reading community, and gives them something different, a different perspective. I don't, whenever people say, "Oh, what is your advice for others?" I'm like, don't say, "I want to be the next Stephen King. I want to be the next Koontz. I want to be the next Anne Rice." No, you be you.
Yeah.
You lend your voice. You take the story. You own it. And so, I wanted to talk about La Llorona because, again, it's a story that has been told over and over and over again. But I asked myself, kind of like with our histories, well, who's telling the story? I wrote another book that's going to come out with Del Rey called Immortal Pleasures.
Ooh, I'm ready.
And, La Malinche, who was a huge historical figure, but there's very little left about her because who's telling her story? Same with La Llorona. Well, who's telling her story? Who says she killed her kids because of a man? What else was going on? Maybe it wasn't. So I wanted to take that idea of silence, of crying, and just flip it around. Like, okay, we're going to tell these stories from the perspective of who the story is about. Same with, like I did with Immortal Pleasures of La Malinche, same with La Llorona and here. And also a mother who, by all accounts, has a nice house. She, her kids go to a nice school. She has supposedly a nice life. From the outside, her story looks great. But you never know what's inside someone's home or in their mind or their heart or their soul or their past. And that's why I kind of, weaved the two together.
Well, but I want to talk about these historical chapters because those are so engaging. I mean, you go back to like the 1500s with the Spanish invasion and how, that still affects us as a culture.
Yeah, generational trauma, with identity. I mean,
yeah, that's not just two or three generations. Like, it's a very realistic way of looking at who we are as a culture because even now we're still grappling with who speaks Spanish and who doesn't and should it matter? And I mean, these
how dark are you? How light are you?
So again, that goes back to how we are culturally affected by colonialism, both from within our own culture and from how others look at us. And then us as the role of mothers don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
Like, we just do the best we can. We navigate it in the best way we can.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And identity is so important. Again, Ali, that's why I wanted to go through that because I'm Mexican American and I go through the generations to show kind of the evolution of the dilution of identity and then the reclamation of it. When she, sees this therapist who's also a curandera. And then at the end, I'm not saying it.
Don't say it.
Oh, spoiled it. Ah,
don't say
go
it.
Go buy the book. Yeah.
So what you've just done happens. Now is thrown out a very nice tease.
Yes. Yes. And so I just wanted to, just delve into identity like all of my books do. Goddess of Filth, The Queen of Cicadas, short stories from Out of Aztlan. I like to go all the way back and then also have things from the present.
Yeah.
It's important.
So in usual V. Castro fashion, you've given us some supernatural elements because it's a horror story, but it's still very much in conversation with books like The Bell Jar, stories like The Yellow Wallpaper, The Awakening by Kate Chopin, which is actually the story that I most closely align your book with because the woman in that story navigates her life as a mother in society, walking that line between someone who loves her children and someone who feels severed from her true self. Chopin, The Awakening is a 19th century story. So is The Yellow Wallpaper, which is also about a postpartum woman. but the feelings are the same now. You know, Alejandra is many mothers living right now. So these problems are centuries old. Why are we still doing this?
To perpetuate the species.
Not motherhood so much as like, why have we not learned from the yellow wallpaper? Why have we not learned from the awakening or the bell jar or medical science? You know, we're still doing this.
Yeah, because I think, again, there are so many stereotypes and so many cultural things that just say motherhood, religion, definitely. I mean, look at the Virgin Mary. Like, the pinnacle of goodness is being a mom and a virgin mom.
Yeah.
And, you know, have this higher calling, and her higher calling was to give birth to God, mm-hmm. Who's a male. And, you know, I think that, you know, women have been reduced to wombs, to our anatomy, both spiritually and physically.
Yeah.
And those are very difficult to break. And also, you know, when women have to fight for advancement in the workplace to get paid, to get recognized, it does take a toll on your self-esteem. It does take a toll on your identity, your existence. You think, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that then people choose to just give up and have kids and whatnot, but the expectation is, oh, you know, you have kids and you have a family, and that's great, and that's all nice, and that's what is expected of you. And a lot of cultures, that is what's expected of women. but in general, we don't, I think, put enough effort into people's mental health. It's like, just get on with it. And especially women.
You know, I think also, speaking of what you're talking about, I think, I don't know if it's generational, but I feel like from the moment we're born, you know, because like right now, you know, they're putting all this stuff in place in Florida so that girls aren't allowed to even talk about periods until middle school or high school, in school. And I'm like, girls that age are getting periods, like, you know, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, they're getting periods. Are they not supposed to have questions? Are they not supposed, like, what? And then like in Idaho, they shot down like legislation that would have funded providing tampons and pads in school. Like, what? And then the whole conversation about tampons being sexual, it's like, no, they're just not, you know, who wants to wear a blood diaper, you know, if you can have a different option? You know? It's like, they just make, it goes back to that idea of making everything about our lives harder than it needs to be.
Well, also, it's reducing us to our anatomy and reducing us to what you know, a certain group of people think women should be reduced to, and to keep us small, to keep us silent. And it's pretty disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as hard as publishing can be, and I know I'm very lucky and I'm so blessed because there's a lot of writers out there that haven't had the half the opportunities I've been given, and I'm super lucky. But it is not easy. That's why I keep doing it.
Yeah.
I have something to say, and I know it has a place in this world. And I know also it tells other women, you have a place in this world beyond your anatomy, beyond what's inside of you, you know. And yeah, it's, you see, you know, across the board with trans rights, queer rights, all of it. It's really just making everything very binary, very just black and white. And that's not life. That's not nature. That's not the cosmos. That's not how the universe operates. It's really awful.
Wow. I need a moment of levity. Do you need a moment of levity? And that's to talk about the music in your book, ma'am. Mm.
I have to always put music in my books.
This is going to be funny for anyone who's brown, who knows what I'm about to talk about. Because you specifically had like Depeche Mode in there.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, and other bands like Depeche Mode. And so a friend of mine and I were talking, having a conversation, because Depeche Mode's coming to Austin. And
nice! Ah, oh, jealous.
I know. Well, she got tickets.
They just released an album, I think.
So my friend married a Latino from San Antonio, and he is very much a Latino from San Antonio. And she's going to surprise him with these Depeche Mode tickets, because Depeche Mode is like everything to him. And I was like, well, of course, because he's a man in his late 40s that's a Latino from San Antonio. And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, oh, you don't know. You know? And I was like, it's a whole thing. I was like,
the Smiths,
Depeche Mode.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. All of that.
New Order. Like, that's our thing, you know?
Yes, it is.
And she's like, I don't understand. So I literally did a Google search, and there is a million think pieces, like from the Washington Post and NPR and blah, 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 on the Latino attraction to this music. And it's just so funny. I was like reading through, and I sent her copy, like pictures. I took pictures of pages from your book going, look,
that's amazing. I love doing, honestly. So if people go on Spotify, all of my books have a playlist.
Oh, noted. Okay. We'll put that in show notes.
Yeah. And so people can go follow me on Spotify. And I love it. I absolutely love it. So that's kind of the other part of what I do with my books, is even if I don't have music in it, I still go and I go create a playlist, because it's so important to me when I write. And music tells stories.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So and it conveys so much emotion.
It's like, I've got to get V to validate me that these bands.
Yeah, I'm upset. I love it. I mean, I grew up with all that music and in high school and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Dreamer.
Did you ever see Ant-Man?
No, not the film. No,
I haven't watched it either, but I know one clip, and it's like something all my friends from South Texas have passed around, which is, I guess his sidekick is a Latino, and he's telling a story, and they're showing it, like the story he's telling, you get the visual of it. His grandma has like a taqueria, and the jukebox is exclusively Morrissey.
Oh my God.
And the grandmother asks in Spanish, like, do you like Morrissey? You know, like, but they call him Moss, you know, because that's what we do.
I love it.
I was like, no, look, there's evidence to support my statement, ma'am.
Oh, I love it. That is so cool.
Oh, my goodness. Well, something I think I saw, and I'm hoping it's true. Are you writing a middle grade or a young adult?
So I've got a... So for Cemetery Gates, a novella, a YA, but it's quite dark. So I started it, but I've had to put it on pause because I had this big project come in that I need to finish. And then I have edits on Immortal Pleasure. I mean, I'm super busy.
Yeah.
But yes. So that, and then I started a YA novel, but that's, and then I have a little something else, but yeah,
I very much want to see you writing younger as well, because I think we need these stories, but like, you have a moment in here where Alejandra's telling a story to her daughter of La Llorona, and I'm like, that conversation reminded me so much of when I was a school librarian and kids came in looking for spooky stories. Mm. And then to have a story, you know, in your book, to have a story that reflected her is a big deal. You know, Kaylin Bayron is doing this a lot too. Her last story, The Vanquishers, I mean, she was from San Antonio. So it's vampire hunter, middle grade kids in San Antonio. Like,
nice. The
streets are identified, you know, neighborhoods and everything. And I'm like, that's such a big deal. You know, I'd love to see a V. Castro, like middle grade or YA. I'm so excited.
So I started a YA, and two pieces. And then I have a kid's book, a children's book, but it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for it to, it's called Poncho Claus.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, it's not Santa though, so I'm still like this.
Yeah.
But that's the nature of the business.
Well, so that means we're all just going to light our candles and make sure that it happens. So.
Yes, honestly, universe, Santa Muerte, bring me the good news. Come on.
Well, you talk in here a lot about curanderas. Speaking of lighting candles,
Yes.
you talk a lot in here about curanderas, as you do in your work. Now, we're both going to be at Ghoulish Fest, and I
Yes.
am going to be leading the panel, moderating the panel on witches, of which you are a part. So, I do want people to tune into that. But do you want to give us a little insight? I mean, because it is such a part of a lot of your work. Like
Just because
your journey with it.
no, I just choose to follow my ancestral beliefs because I feel like religion, Catholicism has really let me down and let our people down. And I feel I gravitate more towards the message of Brujeria, and and that's what I practice, and that's, my beliefs, and that's, I meditate, I, light candles, I speak things into the universe. I have Palo Santo and Copal, and I've got an altar, because those are my beliefs, and I think that we should all, have the freedom to worship the way we want and be who we are.
I love that you post about this on IG. We get pictures of your altars and things. So if anybody's listening that's interested in V's journey through this.
And it's all, I do document, I do talk about it even on Twitter, and because it is part of my life and part of who I am. And there's more than one way to worship, and there's more than one way to believe.
Well, on that note,
Yeah.
thank you very, very much for joining us for round four.
Thank you. I am so grateful. It's always super
Yeah.
fun to talk to you. And I cannot wait to see you in like weeks.
I know, it's so
I'll
exciting.
be in and out of Ghoulish because I will also be speaking at the San Antonio Book Festival. So
Yes.
I'll be doing stuff there. It's going to be like a busy weekend. I'm literally landing in wet on Wednesday, flying out Sunday. So, yeah.
Well, Texas is ready. We're
I'm
waiting.
ready for it. I am ready for some breakfast tacos. Oh.
Oh, yay. Well, thanks so much. And I will see you soon. And everybody, just stay tuned.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me today on She Wore Black. If you like what you heard and want to support my work on the show, you can visit my website at sheworeblackpodcast.com for links to my Ko-fi donation site as well as my online bookshop. You can also help out the show by rating me on Apple and Spotify and following me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook and letting your friends know about the show. Thanks so much for joining me today and happy reading. Thank you.